All right, everyone, if we draw back together there, just one thing to announce before we start. It's the ministry training course Taste Today coming up soon. There's some flyers on the table, so we'd be really grateful if you take some of those back and maybe start thinking about anyone in your congregation you might want to encourage in that direction. So some of the general flyers as well. Charlie, do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, MTC runs on a Thursday, and this is a really good time of year to just think, are there people in your church who might really benefit? So Simon and I are thinking, are there home group leaders or maybe people on our youth team who want to be a bit more equipped? And I think sometimes just being able to approach two or three people and maybe just mention it as an idea, maybe people can get a half day doing it. The other thing you might like to think about is maybe doing a little interview in one of your services. Maybe if you've got someone who's been on the course in the last few years, just getting them up, asking them what it was like, how it's helped them, who they'd recommend it for. I think that's the best advert for it, really. So just to put those thoughts in your mind. And do take these leaflets and give them to people you think might benefit from it.
Thanks, Charlie. Just before James takes us through our second session, I just thought it would be great to hear a little bit from him about Oak Hill. So I won't keep prodding you with questions, so I'll fire them all out now, and then you can do... So this is your chance to pitch Oak Hill to us. So kind of challenges, opportunities, you know, how you see the church landscape in the UK, need for training, opportunities, you know.
I keep dreading about going home tomorrow.
Go.
Well, I've said something, thank you, Tom, very much. I've said something already about the vision for well thought through, well educated, not going to get knocked off our perch by the culture that we're in and the challenges that we're facing, the need for healthy, good leadership, healthy churches in the mix. And the things like these ministry training courses are just a fantastic way of doing that. And I cheered that on. I was with South Central Gospel Partnership 10 days or so ago. But it might be that some of you've got people in your church, do you know, actually, I'm thinking about you being a pastor, you've got the future into that space, exploring that or thinking about future training. And for me, there's a real opportunity for the right people with the right to take, I want to get training, ideally residential, because you've got the chance to be shaped, you can learn biblical languages, you can learn from a faculty and community, you can look at things like what dead people have said, you know, as in church history. What I was just listening to Augustine, you know, on the way here, some of his confessions and so on. They're really important to understand some of the issues of the past, and they can speak into the present in particular kinds of ways. Something about systematics as well, and doctrine, how to get that into your heart and head, and just how do I relate the humanity and divinity of Jesus? In what sense was Jesus forsaken on the cross? Those kinds of questions, thinking through, and that to understand those, and the other chance and space to do that. So Oak has got various courses. I've brought some little cards with me, just so you can look at the website. Talks about open mornings. There's one coming up 24th of Feb. There's zero pressure. We also do it on Zoom, so you can just sign up for that if you're interested in that. Or someone in your church who's thinking there could be a pastor in that way. I should also add, just we're really conscious that a lot of the evangelical church is quite white middle class, and so we have this very generous access bursaries for underrepresented groups, so in financial need, but underrepresented groups, socioeconomically or ethnically or whatever like that. So there are very generous bursaries around that. You're thinking it's otherwise unaffordable. But it seems to me that this isn't the moment to be losing our nerve. Many of us get the air cup. We even think, well, I'm glad I'm not Church of England because of what's going on in Church of England. Look, it's dreadful. I was at the Church of England Evangelical Council this week. But in some senses, it provides air cover for all other churches. If the state church, the established church, is able to hold something, it's much easier for independent churches to hold something. Whereas if the state established church changes in some way, it's not long before that air cover of the legal protections will just come after everyone. So we can think we're better off, though, maybe in some ways, but we need well thought through, well educated. Just that's how you put stones in people's shoes, as well as people of authenticity and love. And so I'm passionate about that kind of training. But right across the board, it's all for all of us to keep keep learning and keep growing. I think that's what pretty much what I'd say. I'm happy to take any questions at this moment, or I can give you the leaflets. Take them away and have a look.
And maybe if I could just... there is, I guess we know there is, there has been kind of a challenge over numbers of people coming forward.
Oh, excuse me, yeah.
Do you see a change in the kind of type of people, age and stage and circumstances?
So that's a great question. So understandably, many people in the church have been thinking, why on earth did I get ordained at this moment in time? It's not like it's set sail from Belfast, or that it's approaching the iceberg, or that it's just hit the iceberg. It's at 45 degrees, and why would I get onto that boat now, is one of the questions in the mix. So many people are delaying. That puts massive impact on student, on Church of England student numbers. There are other great options for training that are out there, and I want to cheer people on. I say this is about gospel heart, not about institutional possessiveness, because that's what we want. I do remain convinced, through church history, and many people are pastoring and teaching things like here, with people have benefited from residential training if you're going to be the senior pastor in a church. Being able to teach the truth and refute error and care for people in the right kinds of ways, it really is a great opportunity. But there are challenges on numbers, because it feels costly. Although I say there are bursaries, but it feels costly in time, costly in terms of money, costly in terms of disruption. But is it too costly not to, is one of the questions, especially for lifetime ministry ahead, is one of the questions. But we're under pressure. But that's not the reason. I think it's because I've gone there because I think it matters, not because, that makes sense.
I mean, I hope we'll get a bit of time at the end for some general questions. We come back to this. Just anything in terms of what Oak Hill also offers, just generally courses for people in church. There are other things going on.
Yeah, thank you.
So there's a full-time residential. It's possible to do things part-time as well. And the travelling, someone comes up from the South Coast, up from Portsmouth, weekly to come to study there. There are online things or equip events where you can join by Zoom or in person. This one is on the mind of the generation gap and what's going on between intergenerational church. What are different generations characterized by different convictions, whether it's baby boomers or Gen Z or Gen Z or whatever it might be, or something for millennials, or there's something else going on. So keep trying to think about that, understanding that world. So there's equip events, and then we're also running a number of, a bit like CPD, continuing professional development events. So we've got one coming on, starting this week actually, on helping equip pastors and others to develop kids and youth work in their church, with Robin Barfield, who's running that. He's used to do kids work with, we've done PhD on kids work, we've done lots of stuff with Word Alive and with Keswick and various other organisations. So various things going on. We can find more on the website and just a bit more there. Tom, thank you. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. Great to see you. You should have a different handout here, a slightly different way of operating this one here. If the first one was about who am I, identity, and being more self-aware, and how we function well in teams and that foundational thing. The second one here is about, listening and conflict. And what I've tried to say is the aim of this session is that we'll be convinced of the importance of listening for handling conflict, and that we will be better listeners. This will be practical as well. But let's just start us off. Who's experienced conflict in their church? They will not done so. Okay, so I take it you're interested at this moment thinking. So just while we're starting, is conflict in church always a bad thing? Okay, so you've got maybe 5 or 6, 7 minutes, maybe 10, just to look at some passages from Galatians and think through why or why not. And then why is understanding this important? Okay, you've got your hand out there. You've got, I'll give you 8 minutes.
Agree on the
Okay, I'm stopping you there, if I may. So, we've all said we've experienced conflict in church. Is conflict always a bad thing? Why or why not?
I think it's helpful, it brings clarity often, so it's not always bad, because you think, well, they think that, we think that, let's work out what we need to think. So, the idea will come out with something better at the end, but know where you stand.
So, a bit of conflict in certain circumstances? Anyone else here?
I know it's not a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing, anyway. Because there are times when we need to contend for a gospel
truth. Okay. So, you could provide that for you, I think it was. We both may have slightly missed the mark. It might come out as a better point than both of us are at. Is related, but to say actually sometimes it's a truth versus false sort of thing. It's not like let's combine the two together and get the best. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, actually in one situation the right and the wrong.
Well, we were having discussions of, like, in that context, whether conflict was could be called good or just necessary, and whether actually it would have been better for the in no conflict. But it was necessary to have the conflict, and it was therefore good that that happened, but was the actual conflict good? Or is it necessary?
Yeah, so in one sense, it can be bad that you have to have it.
Yes. Yeah.
But you still have to have it.
Yeah, and therefore good.
And therefore good.
Good, necessary.
Yeah. Anything else to contact?
I suppose we were talking about that as well, that actually in an ideal world where believers are loving each other, there may be differences, but we work them out. But then, I suppose the reality that we live in a simple world, there may be unbelievers amongst the church, there may be things within us that we've got wrong, so there may have to be a need for it. But in an ideal world, there wouldn't be.
So in one sense, it's always a bad thing. In another sense, it's a necessary, because you need to either sharpen our thinking on something or contend for the truth in some situation. Anything else we've got?
It's on creation, fall, redemption, restoration framework. It is always a bad thing because creation and restoration there isn't conflict.
Yeah.
We're living for the Lord, it's just been said. But good can come from it when it's dealt with biblically. Two sisters or brothers who are reconciled after conflict is a great witness.
I couldn't agree with you more. Actually, throws back into the last session. At the start of leadership meetings that I've run the last year or so, there's a set of cards, I can tell you about them later, you see, which basically you shake a dice, there's five different categories, you turn over the card, you have to answer the question. And one of the questions, because this is about vulnerability, this is about, you know, what you're passionate about, what makes you jitter, you know, all various things. It's about being encouraging openness in a kind of fun way, and vulnerability in the team. And one of the questions, what brings a tear to your eye, was one for me, and it was seeing brothers and sisters reconciled after mess, because our world has got very little way of dealing with that. It's incredibly special when you see that. But thinking of Galatians then, but it's not only like that, is it? Why are you doing the Galatians? As in, there are a bunch of places here when you're saying, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions. It's possible that they're entirely unhealthy. Depends what it's about, you know. And knowing what it's really about makes such a difference. Is that fair? Is it really a doctrinal issue, or is it something else? Is it really something I got to go into battle and contend for, or was it actually something that's from the very root unhealthy and wrong? Is that fair? Mm-hmm. navigating that is one of the hardest things in Christian ministry, I think. A lot of time we end up with conflict. We think we're going to bat and flying the flag, but we haven't necessarily really understood what the situation is and what the arguments are, what's going on. Which is why, for me, I'm going from that conflict question to the importance of listening, understanding what's really going on. So, as we head into that space, I've got a little task for you. I don't know if you have a smartphone or something where you can get your QR code out. Yes.
Do move around if you want to access it.
Has everyone got it?
Yeah.
No, I haven't got it yet. Okay, so has everyone got the question, are you a good listener? You all got there? Okay. Can I take this away? Okay. So, you have to answer that question, please. I'm going to just get the next one off as we're going. Have you lost? You need to get your QR code. Can you get a phone to... Sorry, you're still going. Okay, has everyone got there? Anyone answer that question? So now I've got again the zenith of my technological ability. So, let's try this one here. Let's try to go back away from that. Need to look away for a moment. Next one. Okay, so present, here we go. Okay, I've got three or four more and haven't replied yet. Maybe one of them's me. I've still got some haven't replied. Everyone done it?
Yeah.
Not sure it's not coming up. So, here's our answer. The first one, this is anonymised, so I don't know who's answered which. What would you expect? Let's go. Here we go. 16 of you said, yeah, I'm a good listener. And 6 of you said, no, I'm not. So what's that about in proportion terms? About 70%? Do you think, what's the... 16 out of 22? Slightly more than 70%, maybe? 72%? Who's a mathematician?
72.7.
72.7. Okay, so we go to our next one. What would you say the centre of gravity was here?
Tony.
I got one person said between 10% and 20%, and one said more than 90%. I don't know what your experience is at this point in time. We're looking approximately about here, do you think the average? 55%? Do you think? Slightly? Is that fair?
Yeah.
You know, you've got five below here and five above there, and this is the big bulk. But it's in this kind of space. So it's about 55%.
So, what's your conclusion? What do you notice from those two things? Either you're a very unrepresentative group, and you're a lot, or dishonest, or
we think we're better at it
than we really are. And actually, I was quite generous, I think. And my experience as people, especially going on in Christian ministry, we get worse at listening because we think we've got things to say. We want to listen or to understand, listen to answer the question. But it seems to me, heading back away, that's a bit of fun. If we head back to the handout, listening is really important. What I've done, try to do here is to bring together a couple of our verses from Galatians to serve one another humbly in love, and then the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one command: love your neighbour as yourself. And then a couple of quotations here that pick up on this, and these are very moving and striking for me, and they're very important. If people come across Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book Life Together, do people know who Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Yeah. Does anyone? I'm going to have to unpack if people don't know. Okay, the first service that one owes to others in the fellowship consists in listening to them. I like the first. Just as love to God begins with listening to his word, so the love for brothers, and I put in sisters, is learning to listen to them. And it is, I love this phrase, it is God's love for us that he not only gives us his word, but he also lends us his ear. So it is his work that we do for our brother or sister when we learn to listen to them. I find that very challenging. And another one here. To be able to love others well, you have to learn to listen and pay attention. That's a hard thing to do. I find the realism very helpful there. You have to train yourself to do that. You have to engage in disciplines which will allow you to do that. You have to discipline your egoism. If you want to listen to others, you have to realise you're not the most important person in the room. Because listening means you cease to think about how you're doing and how they're thinking about you, and you stop adjusting your facade with words and thinking about how you're going to get the next bright remark in when you get a chance, and you really generously open yourself to the other person and receive them in love for what they are, and stop worrying about yourself. Now, once you understand that, you'll see why listening is so rare, because listening is one of the highest spiritual acts of love. The first act of love is attention. And then a couple of verses here just to highlight from Proverbs. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. The purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, but one who has insight draws them out. So going back into your groups, 5 minutes. Why is listening important? So join those verses above, other experiences you've got, other biblical reflections, and then we'll come back. 5 minutes.
Okay, I think I'm going to stop you there, if I may. Let's hit the back here. Yeah. Anything else you want to add? Anything that struck you? Were you listening to each other?
I can't remember if I'm getting it. We're just saying that listening, in a sense, to really know someone is quite a slow activity and very different to just thinking, what am I going to say next? I'm particularly as a pastor, if you're thinking, what am I going to say next? To the point of the person to Christ and fix this and get off my desk as quickly as possible, going on something else, then you don't really listen. And one of the things that the biblical counseling sort of initial module did for me was show just how quickly I jumped to conclusions about people and think it's all that thing. And if they solve that, we're going to be okay. And actually, just the complexity of people's lives and the need to listen, to really understand their context, the way they see the world. I think we're just not really wired for it a lot of the time. We want to kind of press on.
The quick fix.
Yeah, the quick fix. Yeah, slowness.
Yeah, thank you. That's immensely helpful. Yeah. If you're not trying to comment on that.
But we're sort of saying sometimes, if you're really listening, then actually there might be a little pause after, so you feel like you have to fill it with something, but maybe you should just not be afraid of silence because you're processing what you've heard.
Yeah, somehow how to listen, I would not give exactly that sense of the face to space, but it's time consuming. How about for you? Yeah.
Talk about how the presenting you see may not be the actual real thing. Mm-hmm. The Proverbs quote about drawing a person out to really see what's going on.
Yeah. Which, yeah, the importance of that if you're really going to engage. Yeah. Anything else you want to add here?
That
can be learned. And it's hard work.
And listening doesn't automatically improve.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I was talking with a guy called David McKee. He is Deputy Director of CAMS, works at the Mortuary. So he's an evangelical, he's a lovely believer. He is now running all the 17 or 18 institutions that are taking the Tavistock referrals. Their list of 7,000 kids in transition, wanting to transition. And one of the big issues he finds in sitting down with is that the parents think that to listen to the child is somehow to endorse what they're saying. And they're looking to push back against them. And even the parents of teenagers, you know, one of the hardest things is to listen to what your child real teenager is really saying and really feeling and really and going into that space rather than giving advice and pushing and not giving the time. And again, as pastors, I think that's one of the hardest things because we're often busy when they're free and we're not blessed with lots of time and therefore we want to process them and package up what, but they don't always want to talk at the moment we wanted them to talk. Yeah. Anything else you want to add here? Wait a minute. No? Nothing else to add?
An exercise for you. You've probably seen it. I need you to get into pairs, okay? I want you to spend 1 minute thinking of a relationally difficult, emotional situation in the church. It needs to have affected you personally, so there's a potential for rawness, but please don't do something you haven't yet processed, because there's a vulnerability in doing that. But think about something maybe in the past. Alternatively, rather not do that, think up a scenario. So you've got a minute, and both of you do that simultaneously, okay? And then I'm going to get the next task. Okay, you've had a minute to think of it. Now get into pairs, please. Spread out so you can't hear each other. Move your chairs. And you've got 2 minutes to listen badly to the person who's talking. You need to spread out, everyone. Don't you need to... Spread out. 2 minutes. Pick two or three ways you're going to listen badly, okay? You can be standing or moving chairs. Move around, don't be near other people while you're here. There are 22 people, so you can find a pair. Okay. Tell me, ready to go? Ready? Go. Okay, stop there, head back to your places, and then jot down what your experience, the characteristics of bad listening, how you knew your partner wasn't listening to you, and what did it feel like not to be listened to? Okay, you've got 2 minutes. Okay, swap. Stop there. We're going to swap over, okay? So now the person who did the listening dreadfully is now going to do the speaking, and the person who feels deeply unlistened to is going to now do some terrible listening. Okay, go back in your pairs. Two minutes. Go. Okay, stop there, head back and jot down again those three questions. 2 minutes. Okay, stop there. Okay, so we jotted down some of the characteristics of bad listening. Some of the characteristics of bad listening.
Yeah,
I mean,
this guy was nightmare.
No, well, that wasn't asking me to drive back in person. I didn't know about how his listening was.
Yeah, just looking at all the people in the room.
So distracted by other people. Yeah, well, you know, church is just the worst thing in the world, isn't it? I find it really hard as a tall person. I can see everyone's heads and see someone going towards you. Just think of someone more interesting to talk, you know.
Something else in terms of response to change the subject.
So completely blank and change the subject. Not a great one.
Interrupting.
Yeah, just interrupting.
Lack of mirroring. You're not agreeing or reacting or anything. You're just
detachment. Just disengagement.
Sam got a phone call literally in the middle of our conversation. Playing it, coincidence, but I think
it's yeah, so just the phone is one of the hardest things now in our culture. What do you feel like when someone answers the phone and talking to them? Or gets the phone out and starts giggling? You know, people like fubbing, don't they? Yeah, the phone's snarling. Just anything else?
Making it about yourself.
Really?
So we have a similar. Similar scenario. Well, you get back to them to me. Then I sort of try what happened to me rather than
saying
what
happened to me. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It sounds like quite a lot happened with you.
Yeah. Sorry. Where to start?
No,
that's quite
a few seconds. I'll see you.
Well, is there anything else to say that I haven't already been said? I think the big thing is eye contact, and I don't know if you've said it already, but I think, eye contact is really important.
Yeah, but not, there's appropriate eye contact and inappropriate, isn't there?
Yes.
Anything else to say?
Okay, so.
Anything else?
Maybe latching onto a misunderstanding too early and just plowing through with that misunderstanding.
Yeah, jumping in early. You're trying to engage in a good way, but you haven't really got to the bottom, so you don't plow up on something and you think, that wasn't what I was talking about.
Just asking incessant questions and not letting people finish.
Yeah, trying to be listening actively, intensively, but just invasive questions. Anyone else got something else you haven't got?
Looking at your watch.
Yeah. Good morning.
Yes. Yawning. Yawning. Look at your watch. Yes, so it's interesting you've had it. I had looking at your watch, interrupting, avoiding eye contact, looking bored or impatient, tapping your foot or fidgeting, finishing their sentences, being completely unresponsive, getting out your phone. So that's one set, which I think we all highlighted. The superficial listening, so you focus only on the words. So how are you? I'm fine. And you think, okay. Fine, that's great, we carry on. You just don't really understand what's going on. That's about the vulnerability and awareness, that kind of thing. You just look at the words, not the other thing that goes in the mix. The self-referring. Oh, I know just how you feel. I felt the same way. The same thing happened to me. The selective, the tuning in and out. And then the pretending. Feigning interest, but not really interested at all. And evidently not. We talked about probing questions. That was another one we had here, which is hopeless if emotion's present. You kind of interrogating almost in the wrong kind of way, and I think that's one of the hard things. And there's none of you mentioned advice, giving advice on the basis of maybe that was your misunderstanding here, advice on the basis of incomplete understanding. When someone gives you advice which you think they haven't really got what's going on in your world at that moment, what do you feel when you receive that advice? You feel misunderstood. So when you're listening to them as they give you this advice, what are you feeling? You feel misunderstood?
Fobbed off.
Hmm?
Fobbed off.
You feel fobbed off. You feel like you're doing them a favour. You're doing them a favour. Mm-hmm. What are they feeling at that moment?
Chuffed.
They're feeling really chuffed. They're being really helpful to you. But it's exactly the opposite of what's going on in that space. Yes, so I ignore it. They're well-meaning. I'm doing them a favour. And there's also judgment in the mix. You know, you criticise them for whatever and you jump in with that. And I don't know if you've come across Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits. Anyone come across that book? Some of you have? It's a very interesting book. He's now dead. That's all right. Dead people are good to learn from. Why church history is good. But he's a Mormon. But he's a very devout Mormon. He was very thoughtful in business kind of world. He wrote this book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which is such a dreadful title in lots of ways. But there's some really interesting things in the mix there. And I found this very helpful. If you're like most people, you probably seek first to be understood. You want to get your point across. And how much more when we're preachers and got a gospel message? In doing so, you may ignore the other person completely. Pretend that you're listening. Selectively hear only certain parts of the conversation, or attentively focus on only the words being said, but miss the meaning entirely. I'm fine. So why does this happen? Because this is the nub. Most people listen with the intent to reply, not to understand. You listen to yourself as you prepare in your mind what you're going to say, the questions you're going to ask, etc. You filter everything you hear through your life experiences, your frame of reference. You check what you hear against your autobiography and see how it measures up. And consequently, you decide prematurely what the other person means before he or she finishes communicating. Do any of the following sound familiar? He gives them. Oh, I know just how you feel. I felt the same way. I had the same thing happen to me. Let me tell you what I did in a similar situation. It just drives you nuts, doesn't it? But when we do it ourselves, because you so often listen autobiographically, you tend to respond in one of four ways. So evaluating, you judge and either agree or disagree. Probing, so you ask questions to your own frame of reference. Advising, giving counsel, advice and solutions to problems, often prematurely if we're saying if we're pastors. And interpreting, analyse others' motives and behaviours based on your own experiences. Last week, I had the good fortune, misfortune, to have a Zoom with Sarah Mullally. Does her name mean anything to you? If I talked about prayers of love and faith in the Church of England, does that mean anything to you? What does it mean to you?
Heresy.
It's okay. Is anyone not familiar when I talk about prayers of love and faith? So in the Church of England, the House of Bishops have been driving through a proposal to bless formally same-sex relationships. Well, they say it's blessing the people and the relationships and that kind of thing in the mix. And the bishop who's been in charge of that is Sarah Mullally, who's Bishop of London. She's now stepped down from doing it. I had a Zoom call for an hour with her last week. You can imagine what I'm thinking of saying and doing. But I was really struck by a dear friend who talked about Rick Warren. He was meeting a noted gay activist, and you can imagine the gay activist was expecting something. Rick Warren just put his hand on an American way and says, "Tell me your story." So I said to Sarah Mary, "Tell me your story. I want to understand your world." Of course, it was, you know. It got trickier later on, but at least you want to try and understand their world first and get what's making them tick and understand, because otherwise we just impose things and people feel they're being talked at and talked past. So, what I've got for a bit of fun. Have people seen Fawlty Towers? If I talk about Fawlty Towers, does anyone not know Fawlty Towers? Do you know the episode when there's the inspectors coming to inspect the hotel? Okay. And Manuel, the Spanish waiter, has got what he thinks is a hamster, but in fact it's a rat. And so Basil is trying to tell him he's got to get rid of the rat. And so Manuel's not very happy about this. And we pick up the scene in the kitchen. I hope. So there's, I hope you'll excuse in this context, one mention of Jesus in the wrong way, but it illustrates the point. See if you notice some of the things. Here we go.
All the ship-shaped band Bristol fashion ale already drawn snoopy drawers. Is this about that room?
Just leaving the players and bears, and he's had to say.
Well, he's not a cheer up movie about my bed, is he?
Just letting
me. Is it not? And you're encouraging it. You're not going to be smiling about it. Well, my mouth, funny thing, it looks good, doesn't it? Eh? All clean and shiny, bright, eh?
So empty without him.
It's just those walls have looked good, aren't they? And hoods gleaming like that, isn't that a marvellous sight?
Please leave me alone, I get over it.
Yes, you think you'll get over it, then no point letting me get you out. Plenty more fish in the sea, eh?
Don't hit me, always you hit me!
I'm not hitting you, I'm trying to cheer you up.
Let it be, Basil.
Look. Oh, don't look at me, those awful cow eyes. Oh, why don't you go to the sequence? Now, why don't you and Polly go to the ice rink? Why don't you cheer up, for Christ's sake? Can't stand his awful self-indulgence.
He's just depressed.
Mama, my wife informs me that you're depressed. Well, let me tell you, depression is a very bad thing. It's like a virus. If you don't stand on it, it spreads around the mind, and then one day you wake up in the morning and you can't face life anymore.
And then you open a hotel.
Michael, what?
Okay. So, the abundance of things which are horrific there. What were some of them?
Complete lack of empathy for what he's going through.
Complete lack of empathy.
He's made up his mind already that the issue is trivial.
Yeah. It's true in his mind, so it must be true in the other person.
Yeah.
I remember when I got a call from someone in the congregation whose guinea pig had died, an adult member, and I wasn't sure quite how to handle it. But there was, for them, it was a big deal. That's why they got the call. Yeah. Anyone else? What other things you noticed there?
He's only focused on his concern
about the inspection. He's only focused on it. He's overriding concern, is sorting out the situation. He wants the inspection to go ahead okay.
There's no desire to find out anything more about how it was affecting him.
No desire to be engaged at all.
Superficial solutions.
Superficial solutions. Cheer up and so on, yeah. Superficial solutions.
What was meant to tone or body
language? No, in fact, criticise for the tone. Why are you crying? You know, we are modern equivalent. You don't need to cry. Or whatever it might be. Yeah. Anything else?
You called Harry was feeling like depressed at the virus.
I mean, yeah, there'll be, you know, people roughly here. Depression's a awful, and I don't know if you've seen those evangelicals now, the two great articles about it, and it's, you know, for those experiencing depression it's really hard, but that kind of criticism of his feelings and so on is, yeah. Anything else? You probably could go on, couldn't you? I mean, inappropriate, you know, they hit me, the kind of the physical contact and they're trying to cheer him up, but anything else you want to highlight?
But the inability to listen to good advice. As in, his wife is telling him.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm not going to listen to you either. Because I know what's going to.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't know what your experience, but I certainly think of times in my parenting where I've sort of ploughed on when my wife has said, I'm not sure that's the right thing to be doing with certain one of the children at this moment in time. And you just, you've got to crack. And yeah, don't always listen to advice. We can't do advice. Anyone else want to hide?
Just trying to deal with it in a public arena rather than a one-to-one situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of fun, but you see the extreme. Okay, now I want you to go back into your groups, okay? Back your pairs. And then do the other way around this time. So it's the same scenario. But now I want you to, from the best of your ability, listen well, okay? Same thing. You've got 2 minutes. Okay, stop there, and then swap over, I suggest, this time. Swap over. Okay, stop there. Go back to your chairs if you were moved away. On your sheets, then, just spend a minute or so jotting down the characteristics that you've experienced as a model of good listening. And how did you know that the person was listening to you? And what did it feel like to be listened to? Okay, you've got maybe a couple of minutes on that. Those questions there, you can fill out one of those sections. We've done the swap in advance.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there if I may. Okay, I'm going to stop you if I may. You're demonstrating bad listening. Okay, so what are the characteristics? I should stop this end here. Characteristics of good listening.
Nodding.
There's some sense of facial movement, that's nodding. It.
Yeah.
Anything else?
And questions and clarification, just to show that you're following along.
Yeah. And so kind of, yeah. Clarification questions, not interrogation, but you know, that.
Patience as well, because like if somebody's saying something, you know, funny, then I think, yeah, smile. But if they're being really serious about something, and you've got big feet smiling.
Yes. So. Yes, because it's a mirror. You're present in that moment, and your mirror, your sense of appropriate facial engagement, expression, pausing, clarifying, but engaging, and yeah.
And asking the kind of questions that give them an opportunity to further expand, rather than we talk about obvious. This is how it impacted on me. I had a similar situation. It's more about
exactly. So not hijacking so I can reply and get my word about my grace with my biography. You'll know from that when some of you have a sad experience, you talk to someone and they will go off about how their ex themselves had a sad experience. Or I know, I mean, again, I've shared that vulnerably about the daughter of cancer, the number of people who will come in with well, I've got some that someone had Hodgkin's lymphoma and they got better with this and they're now happy and well and they're trying to be well-meaning. And one that I kind of get, that's just not the point I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah.
We're saying you can give eye contact but not actually be kind of present there.
Yeah.
But it's really kind of...
Yeah. I'm trying to convince it very well. Exactly. Yeah, again, the eye contact, yeah.
I guess... At some point you pick up, is someone telling me this because they want to be understood or because they are actually looking for advice, and you miss them if you get that wrong. They need to be understood, whatever, but if they come to you because they actually want some help and you just listen and nod and kind of empathise and say nothing, they can be profoundly disappointed. Well, there's no point towards him sharing all of that because I'm no further forward than where I was.
Yeah.
Whereas you're right, someone cuts straight in with advice and all you wanted was to... Yeah, to share your heart, to be understood.
And in a conflict situation or another situation as well, knowing which one of those things it is, makes, and that's costly in terms of time and emotional energy and focus and ego and those kind of things. But until you've done that, you jump in too soon. So many parts of situations are wrecked because of that, and things go worse as a result. Let's run to anything else from tonight.
By seeing that someone's taking your situation seriously rather than trying to make a joke out of it, and trying to be light-hearted in response, but actually recognising that they're coming to me with a serious situation, so let me be serious, not try and be a clown.
Yeah, appropriate and get, yes, thank you.
You wouldn't stop following after you when you told it to you.
Say again, sorry?
You wouldn't stop following after you when you told it to you.
Okay, so that was.
So how do you know your partner was listening, the person listening to you? We're doing that actually, I mean, you can feel it, can't you? You know when someone's genuinely listening in a way that you really want. And the opposite, we do it naturally, you can learn some things. But what did it feel like to be listened to and listened to well? And compare that with the dreadful experience earlier. What did it feel like?
I felt valued as a person.
Yeah.
And, I shared more because I knew that I was being listened to.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just having to restate the facts. There was more development. More self-expression.
And that takes us back to the arena point. This vulnerability means that's encouraged. The arena is then the place whereby healthy relationships can take place rather than it being hidden and closed. And so it maximises the arena, it improves trust and trustworthiness and effective operations of teams. It's right at the heart of that.
But a person can come away from the situation feeling that that burden has been lifted. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're not listening well, they're coming away from the situation with even more of a burden on their shoulders than when they actually came and spoke to you.
Yeah.
But if you've listened well, they will go away saying, okay, my problems aren't solved, but they've listened to me.
And it might be a good advice for anyone in the situation, but sometimes people just want to listen in here. So my wife's been for many years supporting unpaid carers in the community. So these are people who, for example, nursing someone with motor neurone disease or dementia or multiple sclerosis or something like that. Serious caring. There are many, many adult and child carers in this country. And it's amazing how often the carer, no one ever listens to the carer. They want to know how the person being cared for is. They don't care for the carer in the mix. That's what she works with charities around that. And she'd say, I can't solve the situation. I have the money to give from the council or whatever, because it was a statutory service. But it was just, someone just listened to me. I'm okay now. You know, because they love their husband or their wife. They want to keep doing it, but they just need some outlet to be able to talk about it. That's the solution.
I think you feel loved and cared for when you're really listening to.
Yeah.
And it becomes less transactional. Yeah. And you don't feel like I'm using up your time. Even if it's like someone's job in the past call or something.
And that,
I've experienced the kind of love and care of someone genuinely wanting to hear something about what I'm going through. And that, beyond the problem itself, that's way deeper, way more valuable.
There's a whole sense of love, and which is, I think, I love that biographer. You know, the Lord loves us so much, doesn't just give us his word, he lends us his ear. I just was being really moved by that and pausing and thinking about that's a characteristic of the Lord and his love.
I think that's going to have to be the trivial for it to be able to happen in the big as well, doesn't it? So, but just if you're not interested in listening to somebody's day to day, then they're not going to feel comfortable talking to you when there is a shipwreck or there's some real problem out there.
Exactly, because of the arena, you're being vulnerable and you feel you're being trampled on when you're being vulnerable, even the little things. There's no way you're going to go beyond that. And therefore, the arena stays shrunk. And therefore, the ability to have healthy relationships, a depth of relationships, and to work together just goes out the window. And so many churches, so many Christian organisations fall foul here. One of the reasons I've ended up doing what I'm doing is because I've watched so many theological colleges explode or implode because of relational issues. And of course, the devil goes, but you can smell the sulphur in the mix. But there's something which is deeply challenging about that. So, we're coming into land. Just a few reflections. What was I going to say? So, you can look up anywhere online. Actively, that sense of focus we've talked about. The attentive question. The listening to the speaker's body language. The sign of paraphrasing. I'm right in saying this is what the situation... Paraphrasing, clarifying, understanding. And what really goes beyond that is when you connect with the feeling behind the statement and not just the, I know the fact. So that sounds really hard. Your grandmother's died. So you can mirror back and say, oh, your grandmother's died, has she? But without sensing that sense of empathy, that sounds really hard. And you connect with a feeling level. That's when you really feel loved and cared for. But say you can read it anywhere about techniques, but as I put here on a few reflections, first one is the importance of attitude. It comes from our hearts. I've no one else like Timothy who genuinely cares about your welfare. And there's a genuine care that needs to come from heart. And I have to say, I think it's one of the hardest things. I mean, if you're a busy pastor, it's costly with time. How do you do this? It's really hard to make the time. You've got so many other pressures in the mix. Has anyone got any received wisdom you want to pass on about how you do this as a pastor? Or maybe you're thinking, goodness me, I feel very convicted. I've got no wisdom at all left.
Sleep less.
Sleep.
Pray more.
So the attitude is to pray more, but the volume of stuff that can come in and the pressures from and demands from everywhere, how do I make the space for these? I'm I'll drop my glass a second.
One of the things he's seen, this is about, you're not the only person, and this is about training up a congregation to be doing this. You can't be the person who does this all the time. And there's a call for a moment where you have to do that and step into that space. But this is about making disciples, and then people who can go into that space, investing proactively. Because if you're basically, you can only be seen if you've got a pastoral problem, and that's the only way they can ever see you and work with you, then you're going to be limited in the congregation. So it's multiple elders, getting people and training people up into that and investing in that. But that's the importance of attitude. I talk about the importance of empathy in that. And it's that feel, you get that feeling connection. So you're putting yourself in someone else's shoes, so you see what they see, you feel what they feel, without judgment and without advice. You can come to that. In conflict situations, that's really hard. When you are in conflict with someone, when they're annoyed with you, how you can get that empathy in place. And giving people the space to listen. And a little phrase I found really helpful, I don't do it very well, but I know the theory, is being curious, not furious. Because when you're listening to someone else and they're telling a story about how they're feeling about you and how annoyed they are with what you've been saying, you so want to just get in there and say, you're so wrong about this, or you haven't understood this, or whatever. And how you can linger long enough to understand, So when I said that, I'm imagining you felt this. And you feel the blood rising up your neck. And you're saying, I'm going to be curious and not furious. And that's just understanding first. So the importance of empathy in that. And especially in our culture, people say, you haven't walked in my shoes. You can't speak to me. You don't understand my world. There's that kind of standpoint. That sense of standpoint. We have an Glyn Harrison, his book Better Story, he talks about the epistemology of exclusion. Unless you've exactly experienced this, you've got nothing to say into this space. So you can't talk about racism if you're white, you can't talk, and you can't talk about abortion if you're a man. And empathy is a way of getting as close as you can inside that person's world. And, oh, they do understand me, it does sound more like it. Then something about the asymmetry of listening. As in, it's not somehow, I listen to you, so you can now listen to me. It's much more, I listen to you, and then we together listen under the word of God. And especially pastoral situations like that. We try to see what God's got to say into it. And the last thing I was going to say was about listening, collusion and reinforcement, which is, we think, touched on this already, which is that you listen and you're not in judgment doesn't mean you're weak or you're agreeing. And you just genuinely want to understand. And sometimes if it's a really difficult conflict situation, you might say, I just want to meet to hear what you've got to say. I'm not going to say anything in reply. And I just want to listen and understand. I'm not going to reply at all. Give you a chance to say what you feel. And it's an incredibly detoxing way of handling a conflict situation. If you say, I'm not going to speak. I'm not because you're grudging. I just want to understand. And so if you put it all together, we've seen that conflict can be good or bad. And I say it's always bad, but if it's necessary and handled well, that's great. If it's unnecessary and handled well, you can diffuse it and it goes well. But when you go into the bottom right-hand corner to put on the chart, when it's unnecessary, it's not about doctrine or theology, it's about something else, and you handle it badly with this thing. Churches split all the time over this stuff. So for me, therefore, listening is vital for discerning whether conflict is necessary or unnecessary, and handling any conflict well. And good listening involves empathy. So where we try to go today is thinking a little bit about who we are in Christ, our identity, what God says about who we are, the other distortions or mere partial truths. And then and that sense of disclosing who I am, making the arena a bigger space. And then the second session, who are you? Then the place of conflict and how to resolve that and work with that, and the significance of listening and empathy in that regard. I'm very happy to pick up on questions. I'd love to have some time to pray.
But maybe just a few minutes, just on your tables, a couple of things to talk with one another, and then pick up on questions or comments. But let's just, something that struck you or to highlight or question to formulate, and then we'll have questions in a couple of minutes. Okay, any questions or comments you want to bring? Anyone from here who wants to highlight? Obi, anything, any question or comment? Spencer, anything? Any comments? Feel good? Anything you want to highlight? Any questions, comments?
I think that struck me that, kind of pastoral care is the responsibility, or there is a wider responsibility than people who are specifically pointed for that, and by allowing that to be exercised within the congregation, you're allowing the congregation to grow spiritually. So you're stunting your congregation if you try to hold it all in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, anything else?
Only a tiny thing. We've talked a bit about kind of refuting false doctrine and that being a good reason for conflict. I think a lot of the situations that spring to my mind where things have gone wrong actually in recent times are over doctrine. People have fallen, have all been doctrinally very sound. I think where it's fallen down is over gospel culture. And I actually think fighting for a gospel culture in a church, whatever we tolerate of bad behaviour, that's from the leader right the way down, is actually what the culture of our church is. And so I actually think working, it's kind of Ray Alden's point, isn't it, about gospel culture,
yeah,
since the book on the gospel. I think working that out and fighting for that is just as important as fighting for doctrine.
Yeah. So people talk about the best thing you celebrate and the worst thing you tolerate. Mm-hmm. What you put up with defines the culture. What are you celebrating and honouring and highlighting and what are, and articulating? That's one of the things we're doing over the last 2 months is working out what are the values that we collectively want to hold each other to, how are we going, what things we want to operate with. But it's not just a top-down thing, and just we're Christian. I don't think it doesn't work enough for people because people manage to lose sight of it unless you really articulate it. But I think that being able to go into that space about gospel and to challenge those things happens in the context of listening and engagement and understanding. Because if you go through the front door too soon, you just get people back off and back away. Which is why I think that whole thing about the arena and being in big arenas possible and listening means that it enables the place for healthy cultures to develop where people, leaders can be questioned. Yeah, thank you.
Anything else here?
because our time is almost completely up, is up, why don't we just pause a minute on your tables to pray, and then I'll come back to Tom. I'd like to be drawing your prayers to a close. Loving God and Father, thank you for the time we've been able to spend together this morning. Thank you for just the chance to think more about what it means to walk with you, to be your child, beloved by you, and to live and work in ways that are honouring to you. We cry, Lord, have mercy. Christ, have mercy. We know our own hearts, our many failings, our many weaknesses. Help us to keep growing more like Christ day by day. Keep looking to him. Thank you for the empowering of your Holy Spirit. Thank you for each brother here and desire to learn and to grow. Thank you for what you've been teaching me this morning too. And do pray in your mercy and grace you go before us into the rest of this day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Tom, to you.
Thank you so much, James. I really appreciate you travelling all the way from London to be with us this morning. Hope everyone's found that very helpful. Certainly have lots to continue processing. That's it for our time together. If you want to grab lunch before you have to travel home, there are some shops down the road. You can book your car in for another 4 hours if you want to do that. But otherwise, thank you. Good to see you. Okay.
And if you want to grab a leaf, do grab as you go. Or pass them to someone else. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
we're
using that.
before I ask you what it is, that way a leeway stick to it, or that's the actual thing. Do you know what I mean? So, for example, I'm buying Bible reading in the morning, you know, I mean, you know, I do that, I'm trying to do it. I can do that maybe before I can. Is he kind of the answer to do it? No,
we
can do it better, right?
Very nice to see you today. Yeah.
Get rid of our here.
I was just about to say, Jamie's my man, so yeah.
No, I spoke to him yesterday actually, so he was like, say
it. Oh, great, thank you.
So I'm looking at things like Sahara's IT.
Right, yeah.
Yes, and he's very, very full. He's got over an XSLR of
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience getting people through PhDs. A lot of experience. He's good friend. Not far from here. He's a good guy. But he's. I know there's a. Do you remember Stephen Jenkins? You know Stephen? Do you ever
heard of Stephen? He's in Northern Ireland.
No, Union. No, but in West, Britannia, West Wales. Okay. But he was David Firth's Bible. He was with him. His Bible, David. And he said, I'd heard that David's a very tough examiner. In fact, he liked Stephen's PhD, which was great. But you'll get honesty, which I think is a good thing, and experience is a good thing in the mix. So he'd be a good one to explore with, I think, yeah.
I'm happy in the little bit, actually. Thomas, Eric, just get there.
Yeah. Oh, great. Fantastic. Well, I mean, David's, I think his PhD was on the science. Threat and Retribution, I think. Yeah. He moved away from that. Oh, not just that.
He's done a lot of different things, hasn't he?
So he'd be good for that,
Is there anyone else that was JSB's suggestion.
I've been a bit out of the loop, in honesty, for the last few years. So,
that's a go. I may get in touch with Thomas again.
I'm just trying to think of who else was in the UK.
I had a chat with Jim Hamilton. He was over for here, but America, a lot of it's taught, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
A couple of years.
It's a very different thing. If you're going to do a search, PhD, you can do it here.
Remotely, so rather than upgrading the FLA.
Desi Alexander. He's
more pesky.
Excellent. Yeah, he may have wanted to take on that space. I think try, but I don't know, Sue Gilling is retired. Obviously, she's.
Where she was in.
She's. Liberal. Yeah. I mean, she's, she understands evangelicals. Who else? Catherine Dell in Cambridge. She'd keep it fair. How's Sue?
She's all right. I think she was just here pressing a guitar. She's a GP part time. She doesn't enjoy it. She's set up a Christian dance company.
Ah, great.
Which is a textured dance company. Yes. Yeah, that she set up. It's been going about 10 years. Using Bible help people appropriate. I'm normally based on what we've been doing in the sermon series. So she's been doing something that she's very good in. I think it was Mike Irby who originally encouraged her.
Fantastic.
So she's been doing it for the last 10 years. A lot of people impacted. So a couple of productions we put on as a church. She's written, drawing in the other wise man. It's about a very gospel principle sentence. So using the arts.
Which do you want now?
I think a lot of conservative and general judges has been brilliant for evangelism.
It's been creative people. I mean, that's what I loved about Keswick was week three, the Keswick Unconventional, where she looked at all those kind of, there was an art stream that was right across the because Greenbelt's gone way into the distance. But I mean, Keswick, we really thought we were doing stuff with that.
She's done a lot, I think what she's doing nobody else is really doing it in this country, or probably in the world, really very word based, but deep, kind of studies of books, but then go into movement. But she's questioning whether it's a character.